K2 Romeo, India Whiskey. My name is Dick, and it's Sunday night in New York City, and once again we open up another session of the TechNet. This will be TechNet number 1538 of the series that began in September of 1982, 32 years ago. You guys know by now that the main purpose of the TechNet is education. It's a gathering of the clan of curious ham radio operators who get together and teach each other how all this hardware works. Transmission lines and transmitters and receivers and antennas, one of my favorite subjects, space communication. 26 different kinds of ham radio exist, and the 2-meter FM ham radio you're listening to tonight is right now, if you're listening directly from the tri-state area of New York City. That's just one of the 26 kinds. Just realized if you add Echo Link and IRLP, maybe we're up to 28. It's a good number. Lots of guys listen to the TechNet from far places by way of Echo Link and IRLP. Let me drop. And tonight we're going to be opening up with Vito's question from last week that we didn't get to. His virtual question, in other words, he was asking it just before the TechNet on the subject of potentiometers. There's more to that than meets the eye. And believe it or not, a potentiometer and electrocution in seawater have a strong relationship to each other, as you're about to find out. Person signs into the TechNet because he does have a question or a comment for us by giving us his call letters, your name, and the word yes, which means you do have a question or a comment. You need that sign in just because you're listening. We used to have great big long lists of people signing in. Let me drop. And that really doesn't gain anything. After 32 years, we believe somebody is listening. That doesn't have to be confirmed to us anymore. Okay, so give me your call letters and name right now if you do have a question or a comment. K2RIW. That last person trying to sign, you got chopped out a lot, and we didn't even get your call letters, so anything you can do to increase signal strength will help. So, someone to sign into the TechNet, give me your call letters and name right now.
Into Mike Bravo, and yes.
Okay, we got Barry, and there was a double. Who is the other person? K2RIW listening.
KC2MDP, Steve.
YT, Ed, yes.
Okay, we got Steve. Ed, give me your call letters again.
KC2PYT.
Is that Papa Yango, Papa Yankee Tango?
Yes, that's right.
Okay, so we've got Vito, Barry, Steve, and Ed. Anyone else?
BUS2N, Paul, Space Report. Good evening, Dick, John.
Okay, we got Paul. There's another person trying to sign in. I'm hearing nothing but dropouts. Want to give it another try?
KC2FYY. Yes.
Okay, KC2FYY. Fox Yankee Yankee is what I think we're hearing. And you're only there about 10% of the time. What's your name, sir?
It's Warren.
I think you said your name is Warren. You're only there 5 or 10% of the time because of dropouts. So when we get to you, anything you can do to increase your signal strength or move to another location, or if you're on a handy talkie, move it around somehow, because right now you're there only 5% of the time. One last call. Anyone else to sign into the TechNet? Give me a call letters right now. K2RIW listening. Okay. I'm going to take Barry, and then we're going to go to Vito's question. And to Moonbound. K2RIW, go ahead, Barry.
Okay, real good. Yeah, quick question. Doesn't take very long. I want to know how to get into an IRLP node. How do I turn it on? How do I turn it off when I leave? And how do I get it? That's all. Thank you. N2MB.
Okay. If KE2EJ is available, he could answer that one. Possibly KC2WGB. So I know very little about IRLP. Do we have an IRLP Maven on board? Give me your call letters right now. K2LIW listening.
CDL Mobile.
Go ahead, Andy.
An IRLP note running here. Built myself. This is KC2SHO.
Okay, I heard SHO and Andy CDL in reverse order. Andy first, mobile. Go right ahead, Andy. Andy, who's always listening.
Okay, yeah, good evening. Yeah, I'm always listening. But I gotta leave the car, so Barry, I will call you on the phone when I, maybe later on tonight, and I'll explain to you what to do. It'll be a lot easier off the air than on the air. Go ahead.
Okay, good enough for me. No problem. And I'll be up, probably past midnight, so if that's okay with you, that's perfectly okay with me. Thanks, Andy.
Oh, hang in there now. Maybe Jonathan is going to make it clear for us. KC2SHO, tell us about IRLP. Start off telling me what it stands for.
You know, I didn't hear the question, so all he wants to know is, what is it? He wants the general rundown.
Tell us anything, Jonathan. His real question was, how do I sign in? How do I sign out? What do I do to make it happen? And so on. Assume we know very little, and in my case, that would be accurate. You got it, Jonathan.
All right, let's see. This would be a good point of my on-the-spot skills. So, okay, here we go. IRLP is the Internet Radio Linking Project. Their aim is to keep the radio in radio, unlike Echolink or LSTAR. There is no real use from the computer. I'm sure some people are finding ways around that, but they do not like that. So IRLP is typically set up on a node that somebody has, and that node then has the ability to go out and connect to different reflectors, or you can link node to node if you like, and if the node allows that. So two different ways you might typically find a node. Someone may have a simplex node running, and if you ask around, you might be able to find someone local who might put you into their simplex node, or maybe if you just scan around. Sometimes you'll find that people have them connected to a repeater, either directly wired into the repeater, or they'll also use the node the same way, the node radio will then just be programmed for the repeater frequency. I am coming to you tonight on my IRLP node, which is Raspberry Pi plus an IRLP board plus a little Baofeng handheld radio. So that's the quick and dirty. Any questions beyond that?
I've got an extremely basic question, Jonathan. You basically said go to a node, choose a node that I guess is connected to that particular repeater. I've got a desktop computer in front of me, and I decide that, this repeater, I keep hearing someone say it's connected to node 9126. Okay. What do I type into my computer? What's the very first step to get my computer to connect to 9126? And I presume I've got to have a earphone, microphone, you know, a headset connected to the audio system of the computer. As you can see, I'm asking an extremely basic question. What's the first step? I'm almost as bad off as somebody following an instruction in a book telling him how to log into a computer, and something, one of the instructions is inside a parentheses, and the person asks, okay, when I'm logging in, do I type those parentheses? I'm almost at that state, Jonathan. KC2SHO, K2RIW, the tech man.
Yeah, very good, Beck. K2RIW, KC2SHO. Unfortunately, well, I don't know if it's unfortunate. Maybe it's a good thing. That's probably to be debated, as All-Star now seems to be maybe gaining more traction. I really don't know the numbers for sure, but if you want to do that, you're better off going to All-Star or Echolink. Maybe you can find an All-Star node that gets you to the same place, or an Echolink that gets you to the same place. But IRLP does not offer that web-based computer side connection. You know, many of the reflectors, they do publish the outgoing audio as an audio stream, much like you guys have an available audio stream that somebody takes care of there. Someone's got a tuner set on your frequency that sets the stream over the internet, and I use that as a backup in case I should lose IRLP connectivity. It's running right now. But there is no way to sign on and use your microphone in your headset. It is not allowed in the IRLP world.
Okay, now I know what doesn't work. I'm sensing that I need a piece of hardware and firmware that I'm guessing I interconnect with my computer, by which I then become active on IRLP. So if I decide that, gee, IRLP sounds great for me, what's my first and second step? Who do I go to? What do I buy? What do I ask for? Over to you, Jonathan, KC2SHO, K2LAW, the TechNet.
Perfect, next step, Dick. K4IW, KC2SHO. So, I think you have some options here. If you're the adventurous type and you feel you're technically capable, you can buy all the components and do it yourself. That would require, at minimum, some type of computer, whether it's a Raspberry Pi or an old Beater Conker machine that you've got laying around that you want to load Linux on and you don't mind fiddling with. You'll need an IRLP board. That is the interface board that connects between the software and the computer, or I should say connects the software and the computer to the radio. So the interface board has all your ins and outs and some additional controls as well, plus some fancy little LEDs that tell you what's going on. And you can build that yourself. It's fairly simple. It's fairly straightforward. I did have some fun the first time doing that. And there are other options. Some people build them. And there's some what they call micro nodes out there. People are building them and selling them. One particular one I'm trying to remember, it's a bit pricey, but it's a really nice package, and it's around $500. And if you type micronodes, you're going to find it. It's got a touchscreen display with connected right to probably a Raspberry Pi in there, and he's done a really nice job packaging it up and making this really, really, you know, a sweet little package. But to me, that's a little pricey when probably do it all for quite a bit less if you do it yourself. And of course, that little radio is only, a watt or something. When you build it yourself, you have the option of, doing the RF side however you like. Oh, and even that one does have the option to bypass his internal radio and use your own. So I did forget that piece of the puzzle in the beginning. So you need the computer, the interface board, a radio, the software, and some time and know-how if you want to do it yourself.
Okay, we're learning a lot here, Jonathan. In the beginning of that last transmission, you talked about using IRLP with Linux. Does that suggest that it's more compatible with Linux than with a Microsoft compatible machine? Is Linux the way most people do it? I'd like to believe that if I Google the word IRLP, that somewhere there are articles in existence that'll give me some further information. Back to you for that, Jonathan. KC2SHO, K2RIW, the Tech Man.
Your experience running the TechNet shines through, Dick. You ask all the right questions all the right questions for the things that I forget to mention. Yes, it only runs on Linux. I don't know. There might be people out there who found other ways to make that had been, but I've never heard of anyone else running it on anything but Linux. You can load it yourself on a computer, like I said, but the nice thing about the Raspberry Pi is it's sort of all been done for you. You know, you can download this package, it streamlines it, put it onto an SD card, and you follow the instructions, and you're up and running fairly quickly. What I can say, though, is that the information is a bit scattered, depending on what you're trying to do and what your knowledge level already is. I've pulled a lot of documents in from different places, stored them all locally to really parse out the right way and how I wanted to do it and familiarize myself with this. I got going and before I got started. But yeah, Linux only. And some distributions, I think, are better choices than others. Pretty sure the distribution for the Raspberry Pi is Raspbian, which is a Debian variant.
The original guy who asked this question about getting himself on IRLP was Barry, Barry N2MB. You kicked us off on this one, Barry. So please ask for the tools that you think you need. N2 Moon Bounce in Rocky Way, Long Island, K2RS, you got it, Barry.
Okay, John, I got one more question for you. I know that a lot of repeaters have the IRLP available. Now, let's assume here I am on LimeLock, and I want to connect to my son in South Carolina. I know there's a repeater not far from him that has IRLP. So how do I do that? What numbers, letters, do I do pounds, something or other, or what, to get myself into the IRLP at the other location?
You got it, Jonathan.
All right, so a lot of what you're talking about now is going to be system and control operator dependent. So when I look at a system like Lemark, and I know that Reflector 9126 gets me to Lemark, I don't think the people who run that would like to see the Lemark removed from that reflector, because that sort of is your reflector. That means that anybody, anytime wanting to find you guys, can take their notes, take mine for example, just before the net. I disconnected from a different reflector and connected to 9126, and that got me to Lemark. So they wouldn't want that to be offline, because that sort of is the hub around it. You know, you always expect that the Long Island repeater system there will be available when you dial into that reflector. That's not to say that they might not allow it for a special occasion, or if you're friendly with them, they may say go ahead. That's something you need to talk about with them there locally. It can probably point you in the right direction. But you may be able to find other repeaters that are just single standalone repeaters that just happen to connect to particular reflectors, because that's where they like to keep it. They aren't necessarily the main repeater that everybody expects to find online when they connect. So if you can find someone with a repeater or that's on IRLP or a simplex node that's on IRLP, you might have a little better chance of convincing someone to let you know how to control it. And it can be controlled through DTMF. So if you do find someone who allows you to control their system, and they either left it in default control, which would be pretty easy to control because that's all documented, but you can change it as well with custom tones to make sure that you keep it a bit more secretive, if you will. So does that answer the question? K2RW,
KC2, SHL. You've got it,
Barry. Okay, I think I understand what you're saying. In other words, a lot of repeaters, if I wanted to connect, so I wanted to connect this repeater to one in South Carolina, which I know has IRLP, and my son is sitting there with a handy talkie, and I could talk to him if I could get the IRLP to work. That's not usually the case, is what you're telling me. The repeaters don't want me to have local control. I know he got a node. I know that the IRLP will work. I would like to put pound something or other or whatever into this repeater and have it connect to the other one. But that's not the case, is what you're telling me.
I'm not saying that it may not be available to you. I just think from what I know, the little I know of Remark, they are probably not going to want it moved around because it is the Long Island reflector, and that repeater system should always be left there. That way anybody else looking to dial up the Long Island repeater system wouldn't be surprised to find that it's not online because you've moved it somewhere else. It doesn't mean that the other end, isn't something that your, you said your son, he might be able to steer it to the Long Island reflector. So flip your mentality on that. Instead of you trying to connect the Long Island to him, maybe he needs to connect his node to Long Island. Or if you can find another node local that you can get to, maybe you guys can find a common reflector that that you can use together.
Okay, we're going to go to Barry first and then Eric in that order. Barry, go right ahead.
Okay, so what you're saying is my son knows the Limark node. He knows the number to get into Limark. So he's at his end. That would be fine. He could call me on Limark and I could work him. That's not a problem. But can he do that? In other words, can he put pound 72 or whatever to turn it on and then Limark's node number and that kind of nonsense? Can he do that from his end? That would be perfectly acceptable. And if he can do it, how does he do it? How does he sign in and how does he sign out?
Is that it, Jonathan?
Is it his node that he owns and controls? Is it someone else's node that has given him permission to control it? Or is it unknown whether he's allowed to do that yet?
Okay, well, it's at the college. I forget the call letters, but it's a repeater. Right on the college grounds. He's a professor at the college. I can't believe they wouldn't let him use the damn node. So, yeah, it's there, and I just want to know how he uses it.
Well, there are defaults, you know, 73 to disconnect and the four-digit reflector to connect. That's pretty much it. Those are the two default things that are necessary to steer it around. I imagine if someone's left it default, they can't be upset if somebody goes ahead and takes control of it, because that sounds like a zero security situation. Now, some people also handle it from the IP side and disable all ability for the node to go anywhere else but to be full-time connected to a particular reflector. So I don't know. It's completely up to the control operator there at the college. Whoever set it up and manages it has chosen how that works. And if he's left it default, he should just try it. Key up, type 73, and listen for the confirmation that it's disconnected. If it's disconnected, then key up and type in the four-digit code. Yeah, it's probably always best to find out who the operator is, and you can find that on the IRLP site. There's sometimes even emails and phone numbers associated with it. But if you go to the IRLP.net site, there's some tools across the top. You can look up a node, look up the node number if you know that. If you don't know, you may have to look through the list and figure out which one it is. And then you should be able to find for maybe the email address of the control operator. So I do think it's always best to ask permission, even if it is left in default mode.
Chris has a comment.
Guys, I'll stand by. I'm ready for the comments.
Yeah, go ahead, Eric. As you can tell, Eric, we're getting down. We're starting off at very basic level, assuming that I, for one, and Barry, for one, knows very little about IRLP, but believes it would be a very desirable way for him to connect with his son in the Carolinas. So tell us anything you can about IRLP, because I think you've set up a fair amount of that hardware. KE2EJ. Our local broadcast engineer, K2RIW on the TechNet. You got got it, Eric. KQRIWK2J. Let me point out a couple things. The other gentleman is right. If you go to the IRLP.net site and click on node info, and you actually go to your node, there'll be a highlighted line that says, ask a question. And when you click on that, you get to send a little email through the IRLP to the user or the owner of that node, and you can ask if there's any private access to it, if it's okay to use, if this is an open machine, blah, blah, blah. Now, this computer is connected to all the Fletcher nodes, which is 9126, and because it's hooked up to a Fletcher, when somebody hooks up and signs on, it doesn't make an announcement. When they disconnect, it doesn't make an announcement. You usually tell when somebody's disconnecting, you can hear the first little clip of a touch tone of a 7. Generally, the disconnect is 7-3. Now, if you want to dial out IRLP through a Limark machine, we have a Limark machine which does that, and that's our UHF machine. And there is a secret code to make it work. Let me let it drop for a second. And the reason for the secret code is, you can figure it out. Pick up the microphone and start punching numbers and dice things. So, if you want to call your friend in Colorado, you will ask one of the board members or the president of the club for the secret code, and then you'll be able to dial his node directly. The IRLP is strictly repeater to repeater. It's not a situation like Echolink where you can have a computer at home and call it, you know. You in essence can, but that's sort of against the rules. Although they do have portable nodes, which essentially is a computer. But the concept is that it's supposed to go RF at some point, so that's the way it's set up. Back to you, Dick. K2RIWK2J.
Some darn good information there, Eric. Thank you. Barry in 2MB, you probably have some fills required there. You got it, Barry.
Pick up Ridge, Dick.
Okay, yeah, somebody said pick up Ridge, so let's turn it over to Ridge and see what he has to say in 2MB.
K2UPS Mobile, Ohio. I was just going to reiterate what Eric just said, how the 85 machine is only incoming IRLP, but you can use the 440 for outgoing, and you'd have to, you know, contact somebody in authority within a club to get the code. But Dick, just maybe to clear it up for you a little bit more, unlike Echolink, the IRLP is basically radio to radio. Most people, I would say the majority of them, who are using IRLP are not using a computer to do it, unless they have their own node, which is rare. So it's for if you're sitting home in your house on your radio and you want to talk to a guy in California through his repeater, or if you're driving around, you know, you're down in Florida and you want to talk back up here to New York, as long as that repeater has IRLP access and you can get through to it, you can use your mobile radio to access that repeater in Florida, and then through the internet it would come out through 85 and you could talk locally up here. But it's basically radio to radio, unlike Echolink. I don't know if that clears it up at all for you, Dick.
Yeah, thank you, Rich. That's becoming more and more clear. Barry, I received a phone call transferred to me by my wife saying that Rich wants to get a hold of you. That could be the Rich N2EO having telephone troubles. Although maybe it's Rich K2UPS. I'm not quite sure. So you might want to try to get to Rich N2EO. N2 Moonbounce for any fills. K2RIW in the Tech Nest.
Yeah, I'm going to call him on my cell phone. Is not working, but I'll call him on the house phone. I'll do that in a second. Richie, if you hear me, I'm calling you on the house phone in about a minute. Okay, very good. I think this is what I wanted to know. I understand that the 440 machine, Limark's 440 machine, I could access the Clemson repeater through IRLP if I do it on the 440 machine. But I'll get somebody will call me privately and we'll go answer to that. That sounds great. That's all I ever wanted to do. And yes, I wanted to do it through IRLP, through repeater to repeater. That's exactly what I wanted to do, so that's fine. This way I could be driving along in my car, Sam could be driving along in his car, or have his handy-talkie, and I could talk to him, which is a very nice thing. Okay, back to, that's perfect. This is exactly what I want to know. So I guess I'll get a call later, or I will get back to somebody, and they will walk me through the how to do it on LimeWalk. That's perfect. K2RWN2MB, question answered. That's real good.
Hey, John, sounds like we've got a happy customer here. I'll have to send him a bill. I think there might be some additional information you want to send to us, John. KC2WGB, K2RIW, the tech man.
That was the only additional from Rich. He was trying to get in there, but he was short-keyed so much he couldn't squeeze in there. So back to you, Dick.
And now's as good a time as any for us to give a great big long pause. If anyone else who's in the outer hinterlands and wants to sign into the TechNet, give me a call. That is right now, K2RIW, and name.
N2O Richie, hang up your telephone or I will never get through to you.
Okay, I'm hearing nobody else except the repeater up north when this one drops out. Alrighty, good information. Anyone else with any final words on IRLP? Good, bad, how they've done it, like it, whatever. If you want to give us any further words on IRLP, do so right now. Give me your call letters, K2RIW.
Oh, I'll give you another good bit.
You got it, Eric.
Now, if you're interested in fishing on IRLP, if you go to the website, you'll see there are things called reflectors. There's a couple of big ones, like the reflector in Las Vegas, Nevada. Usually we'll have something like 15 or 20 different repeaters hooked up to it throughout the world. Another good one is the one down in Victoria in Australia. There's a couple of other big ones, the Dallas reflector. And by the way, each reflector is broken up into 9 different channels. Like on the Las Vegas reflector, 9250 is the Las Vegas reflector. 9204 is the Hawaii reflector. We're talking people in Hawaii, satellite number. You gotta look. There's a whole lot of interesting stuff like that. I talk to my friends in Japan by dialing up 9202. K2RIW, K2JAX.
Glad to hear all that, Eric. Who wanted to make comment?
KC2SHO.
You got it, Jonathan.
My only additional comment would be that I have been collecting a list of interesting nets that are available on IRLP. I would also love to hear about any other nets that may be available on IRLP. So if you look me up on QRZ, shoot me an email. I'll gladly send anyone my list.
That's an attractive offer. You probably said it earlier and I missed it, Jonathan. You're talking to us now by what mode? Echolink, IRLP, or Direct RF? I think it's one of the first two. You got it, Jonathan.
On IRLP, Dick.
Okay, I should have recognized that. Okay, good stuff. And we'll be picking this one up again in future weeks, I can tell, because I think there's more to it here than first meets the eye. Eric, I do remember you mentioning IRLP. You're going to be adding that capability to the LimeWalk repeaters. Seems like about 5 or 7 years ago you first mentioned that to me when you and I were at a face-to-face meeting. Is that roughly when you did it? Is that roughly when the concept became operational? Tell us a little bit about the history of IRLP and how you first heard about it. KE2EJ, K2RIW, and the TechNet.
K2RIW, K2EJ. Well, the concept, yeah, it's been about 7 or 8 years already. The initial real reason for putting it in there was to link the Selden machine with the was all intact. I basically had one machine dialed up to another. If somebody else wanted to join in, then they would dial up one of the other two machines. It would make an announcement that someone was trying to reach our machines. And then you either had a choice of disconnecting and letting somebody else come in, or reverse dialing the number that dialed in. And this was before we actually got the use of a reflector, which came about 2 years after that. So this machine has been on 9126 now for, I guess, about the past 6 years. H-O-R-W, K-2-E-J. Oh, by the way, once it got put, it's like, you know, you don't even know what's there. So it's been a great addition to us. Because we have so many members and so much shenanigans that go on, that's why we don't let people dial out. K2RIW, K2J.
I thank you, Eric. Quite often in the morning on the way to work, Joe and Steve on the 440 machine for Limelock, while they're mobiling, Steve in particular will call up his buddy in London and talk to him. I should know, but I don't know, when Steve does that in the morning, is that an Echolink connection or IRLP? Because he's dialing a particular number, and then all of a sudden he then gets on and calls CQ London, so to speak, or gives out the call letters. Sounds to me like that is an IRLP connection that he is enabling from his mobile. Bunch of guesses on my part. Getting up close, Eric. KE2EJ, K2RIW in the deck net.
Well, as you know, on this machine we have both IRLP and Echolink, the same thing on the UHF machine. So here we don't let the Echolink make announcements, we don't let the IRLP make announcements. Over there, we let both things make their announcements. So I suspect, because to dial up a Echolink node is a little more complicated, and I don't think anybody's ever actually requested the access code for that. So my guess is that he's dialing up on IRLP. And if you're hearing other people besides his friend that he's talking to, chances are it is IRLP because he's coming out of the repeater at the other end. P2RIWK to the gas.
I am talking about Steve, K-H-U-I-H-Y. He turned silent for a few minutes. I presume he's dialing in an access code. The repeater in London becomes operational. He either calls the call letters of his London buddy or calls CQ London and announces who he is. So it certainly sounds like he is enabling a connection between Limelock's 440 machine and a machine in London, which might be on 440 or 2 meters there, I don't know. So I guess a person with that capability, given those access codes, could dial quite a large number of places. In other words, establish a connection between the lightly used 440 machine in the morning and a machine in Australia, probably Japan, certainly London, for all we know, France, and a few other places. So looks to me like it's got a lot of capability. In fact, I am guessing that if you know the right node numbers, there's a large number of countries that I could establish an IRLP link between the 440 repeater on Long Island and the repeater in some other part of the world. So let me ask the inverse question. Rather than ask how many countries can I go to, how many countries can I not go to with IRLP mobile radio to radio? KE2EJ, K2LIW in the tech net.
NY2HF for the comment.
Alright, we'll pick up the other station in a second, Dick. Let me see if I got it. Okay, I'll give you a couple of examples. Actually, all of the different announcements, believe it or not, are actually available in your local machine. I can give you an example. I'm going to play one for you. There are problems with IRLP in other countries, and it's called third
third-party agreements. We don't have third-party agreements with many countries, so there are, those countries will not be available on IRLP. Actually, there's some special cases like Japan, where the hams in Japan and the JALL got together and forced their OFCOM to allow their IRLP repeaters, even though we still don't have third-party agreements. It's kind of funny. Let me see if this works, and then you can pick up the other station. Alright, pick up the other station, Dick. Get your IWK to Jack.
Grapevine, I heard somebody say you want to make a comment. I don't have this call letters correctly, but it sounds like NY2HO. Please correct me on your call letters, sir. Tell him just your name, and proceed with your comment. K2RIW in the TechNet. My name is Dick.
Hi, Dick. NY2HF, Dennis, out on the east end of Long Island, Cutchard. As far as Echolink, you can just about reach out around the world. So it doesn't matter where you are. If you can hook up to Echolink, you can just about grab any node that's on its repeater system, and also individuals, as long as they're available. So, you know, you got a worldwide reach. It doesn't really matter, you know, where the repeaters are. Back to the net.
Pretty fine, Dennis. You're sounding quite good tonight. I am guessing you're coming through the Eastern Link on this machine, 147.375. Correct me on that when I pass it back to you. And it looks like Eric has made some improvements in that link. You sound good. NY2HF for a comment. K2RIW in the TechNet.
Yes, I'm coming through the Eastern Link. It's been a long time since I've been on Limon, but I'm happy to hear, you know, your TechNet. It's always informative, so I appreciate it, and I think the rest of the world does, especially those coming through Echolink. What I will say is one of the frustrations with Echolink is that when you don't pause between transmissions, they get cut out, and I found that when sometimes I couldn't reach you on through the repeater and I went through Echolink, I was getting cut out all over the place. So it's just something to keep in mind that you really have to pause to allow the people who want to come through Echolink to be heard. Back to that.
Thank you, Dennis. Eric has set up things during the TechNet so that in between transmissions, we hear a total of 4 tones. As long as somebody doesn't jump the gun and waits for all 4 tones, is that enough time not to cause an upset of Echolink or IRLP? Or do we have to even wait beyond the 4 tones, in your opinion, Dennis? NY2HF, out there in Cutchog, on the North Fork of Long Island, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Thank you, Ned. Dick, actually, I don't hear the 4 tones on my radio, so I'm not sure what other people are hearing. But you might be hearing it, but I've never heard it. I've heard that many times where you said there was 3 tones or 4 tones. It's not coming through on my radio. So that might be something to be aware of. Back to Ned.
Comment, Dick. Okay, comment, Dick. Please tell us who you are and proceed. K2RIW.
Roger, Dick. This is Kilo 1 Mike Juliet Mike, Mike number 2. My experience with Echolink, I believe you have to wait for the carrier to drop, not just the tones, but the carrier to drop, because it's hanging there waiting for that dead, lack of carrier. That's all. That was my comment. Kilo 1, Mike Juliet Mike, clear.
Good information there, Mike. So right after I make this transmission, we'll let the machine drop just to make sure anyone trying to get in has a chance to do so or to do some resetting. The man you're just hearing now is K1MJM, Mike number 2, we call him. There's Mike number 1 and Mike number 2. Mike number 1 has the website, which you get to by going to www,
www.amateurradio.tangovictor. And when you go there, you'll find that the last 7 years of the TechNet are recorded. And you choose the year, the month, the week, and each one of the four reels, which are an hour each, and you can play back the TechNet. So there's a lot of information there. Mike number two, the guy you're hearing right now, has a website you can get to by going to www.limogtechnet.com, and you'll see lots of other information, copies of articles on interesting pieces of information, like how to get the world's most perfect impedance match to a dipole, whether that dipole is all by itself or whether it's buried inside of a Yagi antenna or any one of the other 500 kinds of antennas that contain a dipole. And so Mike has that kind of information and some pictures, some exciting pictures of a selfie of a guy on a very high tower looking up in the air, and you see all the way down the tower and another crazy guy standing in the middle of a great big array of 16 Yagis on the top of a 100 feet of tower. So some good information there from Mike number one, Mike number two, and something we should mention periodically so that people have access to those resources. The next guy on our list was Steve. We've been keeping him waiting a long time, but he's a patient man. KC2MDP. We'll discuss anything except antennas.
Repeater, time out.
Sorry about
that. Come back when you can.
Okay. Maybe we should go down. Is there something additional that we didn't cover yet, Eric? KD2EJ, K2LIW, and the TechNet.
Yeah, I just wanted to correct something. As far as Echolink and this repeater is concerned, we have the countries that are not members of a third-party agreement or a CLEP, the various different agreements. We have them blocked so that way they can't come over the air. When you're doing Echolink from your computer to somebody else's computer, there's no ham radio involved. It's just, it's just the title of the program. You're not using air at all, so none of the rules apply there. As far as waiting for the carrier to drop, well, that's cool. Depending upon the connection that you made, sometimes it's 3 seconds, sometimes it's 4 seconds. It doesn't actually have to wait for the carrier to drop. It's just whatever that period is. When our carrier dropped after you let it go, I think it's about 5 seconds. And one last thing. Did you see that email of the tower that I sent you? Anyway, K2IWK2J.
Y2HF would comment.
Bernie, correction. Dennis, recognized. Yes, Eric, I did see that tower picture. At first, I assumed, because of the way the camera moved around, I assumed that what I was seeing... Let me drop it. I assumed that what I was seeing was a man on a tower and that it was computer-generated graphics. Then something else led me to believe that maybe it was really done with a drone-helicopter camera combination. So it's an exciting set of pictures. And there's also a very similar set of pictures for the guy in western Pennsylvania. Wish I could think of as cold it is right now, who has about 8 towers of more than 100 foot high on his property, on his couple of acres of property. And 2 or 3 guys have used drone camera helicopters to take various pictures. Some of them are extremely well done, where it looks like it was done with a Steadicam, if you know what I mean. So I'm now of the picture, of the opinion that YouTube video you sent me is real. It's not computer generated graphics, and it was done with a very stabilized drone. Is that true, Eric? K2EJ, K2LIW,
3LR.
2LIW, K2EJ. Yeah, you're close. At first glance, you might think it was computer generated. It's actually not a drone helicopter. It's a real helicopter. The company that put that together actually mounts the antennas on those towers, so that's one of their real helicopters with a gyro-stabilized camera on it. And the point of view video is from a couple of GoPro cameras that one mounted to his helmet. I mean, you know, that takes
a long time to climb up that tower, and I don't know if you noticed, but if you had scrolled down to some of the replies to that video, there's another video there of another 1,000-foot tower being climbed, so I thought you'd get a kick out of that.
Yeah, John recognized. The second video, I've seen it a few times before. It starts off saying that there was an accident at a tower, and then somebody drives up with a truck. It's an animation. And then you see the guy really climbing the tower. When he gets to the top of the tower and he starts climbing, the antenna itself, it looks to me like the antenna assembly and the mast holding it coming out of the top of the tower is some ridiculous height, like 60 feet of mast and another 60 feet of antenna. I'm amazed that thing doesn't whip around. Am I misjudging that one, Eric? KE2EJ, K2LAW.
I don't know how carefully you looked at it, but that stuff was rusty. I had shaken sight of the guy that one of those little footholds just collapsed. But I don't feel bad. I mean, when we change the bulb on the top of my tower, you have to climb over the radome in order to get to it. So, you got to say, your hat's off to these guys. But, you know, looking at the first guy, you got to think he's nuts because he doesn't use his safety harness as much as he should. You know, he called it free climbing at 1,500 feet. Well, have a good time.
Yeah, free climbing at all is certainly dangerous. I never do it. Whenever I climb my tower, there's a lanyard around the back of the tower. And yes, it hangs up on various things, and it's a bit of a pain, and it slows me down. But at least I'm continuously connected to the tower. When I come to a set of guy wires, where I have to disconnect that lanyard, I connect a cowlick, as it's called, another a piece of 5,000-pound rated nylon webbing with a carabiner that goes between my chest harness and a rung of the tower. I connect that before disconnecting the lanyard. So I'm always connected at least once, if not twice. When I get on station, I've got two lanyards, one for my waist harness and one for my chest harness that go around the tower. For a guy to lean back on just one harness, where there was no backup, it's kind of risky for a guy to do any kind of tower work where he's spending significant period of time either free climbing or freestanding. It's very foolish. Now, when you're 15 feet up, 1,500 feet up, it certainly, let me drop. It certainly makes you feel very uncomfortable. However, anything beyond 30 feet is likely to be lethal when you fall beyond 30 feet, 40 feet. So whether you're 30 feet up, 300 feet up, or 1,500 feet up, it's almost like saying the man's going to drown in 15 feet of water or 150 feet of water. In either case, you drown. So, without a doubt, at 1,500 feet is a much longer exposure time, much higher probability of lightning giving you grief, much higher probability of a high wind, because there's always high winds at the tops of towers, with rare exception. I'm going to go to John and then Dennis in that order. John, the guy in Western Pennsylvania, who when you go to QRZ.com and his call letters, and then you go to his write-up at the bottom of the page, you see a whole bunch of videos very well done with drone helicopters. And I think you're telling me that Kilo 3 Lima Romeo, is that the full set of call letters? I'm not sure the machine had completely picked up your audio. KCQ-WGB, K2LAW, the tech man.
That's correct, Dick. K3LR, and that's from Rich, K2UPS. He is actually passing that occasionally, from what I understand, and sees it all the time. So good stuff. I'm going to check that website out. I'd like to see that little helicopter he's got buzzing around there.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but this guy, and right at the border of Western Pennsylvania, where you go into Ohio, my goodness, does he have towers. And he's got an HF station that's extremely competitive during many of the contests. He's got one of these setups where he's got an acre or two or three of property with probably no less than five towers that are over 100 feet. They look like Rhone 45 or above, very substantial towers, very well guided, very well manicured lawn. Lots of antennas, lots of rotators. Many of these antennas rotate around the tower.
very well set up situation where this main ham radio operating room looks to me like it has 5 or 7 operating stations with state-of-the-art equipment on each one of those stations. So each one of those stations is going to have a full setup of HF and VHF equipment, antenna rotator controls, and whatever. So I am guessing he's got a station that's devoted to only 20 meters, maybe even 2 of them, station devoted to 80 meters, and so on. So very serious contest operation. So you go to QSZ.com, dial in K3 Lima Romeo, and then go to his information page. You'll see 2, 3, or 4. Let me drop. 2, 3, or 4 YouTube videos that were done by various friends of his who brought along gyro-stabilized helicopter-mounted camera things that took some very exciting bird's-eye view pictures. A very steady bird, if you know what I mean. Exciting stuff for people who like high towers, and I'm one of those. I can look at that stuff for quite a long period of time and say, wow, I wish I could do that. And I'm trying. I know you get some additional information for us, Dennis. NY2HF, out there in Kutchog, one of those Indian-named towns, K2RAW and the TechNet. You got it, Dennis.
Thank you, Dick. In all deference to Eric, it takes about 8 to 10 seconds for Echolink actually to come through. On the tones, I'm only hearing 2 on the repeater. What happens is there's a delay on Echolink with the voice coming through. And by the time people try to transmit, because they can only transmit, they're locked out until it's open. They can only transmit after the last voice is heard. By that time, somebody is already talking on Limark, and it becomes a problem. I believe me, I shared the frustration. I used to try to use it, and I gave up. So what I'm trying to say is that you're probably talking about 8 to 10 seconds of downtime in order to enable Echolink to come through. Just my 2 cents. Thank you, Dick.
Very fine, Bernie. And I allowed the machine to completely drop just in case. And I've heard that now quite a number of times, that people are quite frustrated. My buddy down in Grand Prairie, Texas, right outside of Dallas, WA5VJB, who used to sign into the TechNet from Texas, had a lot of trouble with being locked out because we get so excited when we get on our favorite subjects that we jump the gun. Alrighty, once again, we're going to try to go to Steve, KC2MDP. Steve will discuss anything except antennas. I say that because Steve quite often discusses antennas. You got it, Steve. K2RIW in the TechNet.
Dick, also remember, we're monitoring Echolink a lot more carefully now, so it's a little easier.
Yeah, we've got John on the computer continuously monitoring, so if somebody has trouble getting in, we now know about it. And I thank you for that one, John. Steve, you better grab it while you get the chance.
Okay, Dick, yeah, very good. Yeah, unfortunately, Dick, I'm sorry, but I do have a question on antennas. My question is, what determines the efficiency of an antenna? Now, I was reading on this, and it's getting me a little confused here. I always thought that an antenna, you know, a resonant antenna was an efficient antenna. And I'm reading, and from what I get out of this, that a non-resonant antenna can be just as efficient, maybe even more efficient, than a resonant antenna. Now, I'm not sure if they're talking about, you know, if there's no match on the system or not, but this is, you know, basically what actually determines the efficiency, or maybe my just, my definition of efficiency is wrong. So any words you give me this on this, Dick, would be greatly appreciated.
That's an extremely good question, Steve. And it's an area of strong misunderstanding, certainly among ham radio operators. And it's even a moderately strong area of misunderstanding among antenna designers. I'll give you some warning as to what's going on. There are at least 3 definitions of antenna efficiency. If I dig a little deeper, I'll bet you I can find number 4, 5, and